From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Buronk, and this is Arizona Spotlight. This morning, Christopher Conover talks with Governor Janet Napolitano and House Majority Leader Representative Stephen Tully. Robert Rappaport profiles Pima County's efforts to control airborne dust, and we'll talk to a Tucson couple who are being honored today during the 19th annual centenarian celebration. Plus, local author Dr. Ruben Nyman will be here to talk about his book, Healing Night, The Science and Spirit of Sleeping, Dreaming, and Awakening. Those stories and more are coming up, but first. It's do-or-die time in the legislature, which means the Republican-controlled House and Senate are finding themselves at odds with a Democratic governor on some crucial issues. Christopher Conover has the story.
The legislature has passed the 100-day mark for this year's session, and budget talks are now beginning to get underway in earnest. For the last few weeks, the governor and legislative leaders have quietly met to try and come up with a budget deal. So far, the two sides have agreed on certain things: how much money is available, and the caseloads for access and other services. But House Majority Leader Representative Stephen Tully says now comes the tough part.
We've agreed on the size of the pie, haven't agreed on yet how to spend it.
As the saying goes, the devil is in the details. And in this case, Governor Janet Napolitano says those details are some major philosophical differences.
I think it's fair to say that we have different visions for Arizona. I believe that in addition to some tax relief, we ought to be investing in Arizona. And that means education, it means transportation, it means higher education, so that we have the workforce of the future ready for the jobs of the future. All the leadership want to talk with me about our tax cuts, which I feel for relatively little money back in an individual's pocket will sacrifice our ability to invest in the long term. So that's a big pivot point issue for Arizona. It's an important crossroads that we're at, and this is not going to be easy. But I will work hour after hour, day after day. I'll stay at the table as long as it takes.
Majority Leader Tully agrees with the governor. The differences in the budget are philosophical.
The budget out of appropriations of our appropriations committee is $1 billion over what we spent last year in the budget. And that's not including another $950 million we're anticipating or arguing over. So, we think that in all that new money, that some of it can go back to the people of the state on a permanent basis. The governor has indicated she might be okay with some sort of rebate, but is not interested in that.
Neither the House nor the Senate has passed a budget yet, so the talks between the executive and the legislature are an attempt to avoid a ping-pong game of state lawmakers passing a budget, sending it to the governor, only to have her veto it. Though if progress is not made, that could very well happen. Another looming showdown at the state capitol is immigration. A week ago, House leaders announced they were crafting an omnibus immigration bill, including some provisions that the governor had already vetoed. The governor says her message to state lawmakers regarding the proposal is clear.
It's time to quit playing veto games with immigration. We need real solutions that really help our border counties. And once again, the omnibus bill they're working on is one that has some very nice ingredients in it, but then a few drops of poison kind of the dare the governor to veto the whole thing and then go out and say, well, she doesn't believe in immigration enforcement. Well, I do believe in immigration enforcement, but I believe in doing it in the right way and in doing it in an intelligent way and not just throwing bumper sticker solutions at the problem.
House Majority Leader Tully admits the progress of the omnibus bill has slowed, but he's confident it will happen.
When each one of these other previous bills have gone up, the complaint from the other side has been, well, it's not omnibus, it's not a complete package. If you gave me a complete package, I could vote for it, but since it's only a part of the package, I can't vote for it. So if we throw them all together, no one's going to vote for it anyway. But so the idea among some was, well, we'll put it all in one package, then it'll be a comprehensive immigration package. I think we're still looking to put together a comprehensive bill of some sort, but there's obviously a lot of different ideas about how we ought to address immigration, and you can't just throw everybody's idea into the pot and think you're going to get soup. You know, there has to, and so people are working on figuring out exactly what is the best way the state can address the concerns of the citizens regarding immigration.
The governor is not shy about using her veto pen, turning back more than a dozen bills in a little over a week. But all sides say a budget and immigration reform can be accomplished before the legislature adjourns. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
Stay tuned to Arizona Spotlight. Up next, Robert Rappaport profiles Pima County's efforts to control airborne dust. That story when we continue with Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Pima County's efforts to control airborne dust are being recognized nationally. Robert Rappaport examines the county program.
Pima County recently received a national award from the Environmental Protection Agency for its Got Dust, Keep It Down television commercial, which shows a boy walking to school encountering dust sources along the way.
About 200 people in the Tucson area will die this year from breathing airborne dust. Got dust? Keep it down. For information on how you can help, contact Pima County Department of Environmental Quality.
Just because we live in a desert doesn't mean the air has to be dusty. In fact, there are rules against it. The Pima County Department of Environmental Quality is the agency in charge of enforcing dust regulations, known as Title 17, which states no person shall cause, allow, or permit the cleaning of any site, roadway, or alley without taking reasonable precautions to prevent particulate matter from becoming airborne. Karen Wilhelmson of PDEQ says the county refers to flying dust as fugitive dust.
Fugitive dust is particulate matter pollution. It's also called particulates or simply airborne dust. So it's tiny solid particles or liquid droplets that are in the air, and it's suspended in the air, and when we breathe it, it can cause damage.
Wilhelmson coordinates the county's fugitive dust program.
It's actually one of the most significant air pollutants here in Pima County, and it can cause difficulty breathing, so you might choke and wheeze and cough a lot. It can cause chronic bronchitis, trigger asthma attacks. It can even cause heart attacks, chest pain, stroke, and even premature death by 1 to 8 years.
And who must abide by the nearly two-year-old Title 17 dust regulations?
Everyone. Not only is it companies who are permitted, like construction companies, but smaller companies like landscape companies, hauling companies, street cleaning companies, the title applies to them. The average person, a homeowner, somebody who rides an off-road vehicle or even a bicycle, everybody needs to be aware of the dust that is created from the activities that they engage in, and they need to do some kind of reasonable precaution to reduce particulates from becoming airborne.
Even though land moving companies may take precautions about creating dust while they're working, Wilhelmson says many haulers track dirt on their tires, creating another major problem.
And that gets entrained in the air. And as more and more vehicles drive over this dirt, the particles get smaller and smaller and smaller, which become even a greater health hazard because they can travel more deep into your lungs.
While fines for violating dust regulations in Pima County can run into the thousands of dollars, Wilhelmson says imposing fines is a rarity, with her department more focused on providing information.
So what we try to do first is educate the person or the permittee that they're causing a problem and they need to take some kind of action to control it.
Some of that education involves teaching the hazards of dust-moving leaf blowers, which Wilhelmson says don't have to be that bad if people take proper precautions.
So we encourage them to use vacuum blowers so they can suck it up instead of blowing it. They can turn down their the speed of the engine, so it is going to just blow the lightweight, like the leaves, instead of the dirt as well. Use brooms, shovels, and rakes. You know, they're obviously cause a lot more manpower, and they're less timely in getting the job done, but it's options that we suggest.
Wilhelmsen says many communities ban leaf blowers, but Tucson is not one of them. Richard Underwood is the senior vice president of AAA Landscape, which works on many commercial projects in Tucson and Phoenix. He says his company is aware of the dust regulations and makes every effort to mitigate particulate pollution.
We're about beautifying the environment, not degrading it. And with as many trucks as we have, our visibility in the community, it's really important for us to do things like tarping loads. That's just good business sense, because aside from the dust, if something flies off of your truck and causes an accident, then you've got a huge liability there. We have water trucks to cover our jobs and do dust abatement.
Karen Wilhelmsen of the Pima County Department of Environmental Quality says everyone, even the weekend yard warrior, needs to be careful when working on dirt.
If they're doing major work, where they want to rent a bobcat or a backhoe and move dirt or even just lay gravel for landscaping, they do need to be aware that this could cause plumes of dust over long periods of time, depending on how long their task is. Things that they could do to alleviate the problem is wet the soil down with a hose before and during operations, and also after.
Wilhelmsen says soil, if left undisturbed, forms a fragile crust and is resistant to wind. Of course, that all changes once the land is disturbed. For more information on dust regulations, log on to www.deq.pima.gov and click on the air link. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Robert Rappaport.
When we continue with Arizona Spotlight, I'll talk with a Tucson couple who are being honored this morning at the 19th Annual Centenarian Celebration. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. This morning, the Pima Council on Aging and Tucson Medical Center will be celebrating the 19th annual Salute to Tucson Centenarians. All the citizens being honored are 99 years old and over. This year, there are 146 centenarians being honored in the Tucson community, and for the first time, a couple will be among them. This is the story of that couple. Their marriage has lasted longer than some people's lives, and no doubt, not a day has gone by without laughter. In a small casita at a Northwest Side retirement community, a tall, thin man reaches out his hand to greet me. His piercing blue eyes match the hue of his plaid shirt. His handshake is sturdy, and he doesn't look a day over 80. But he is. In fact, he's about 20 years older.
My name is Will Miles Clark, and I'm 101 years old.
Will Clark was born on the 17th of August, 1904. In a few short months, he'll be 102. His wife, Lois, sits across from him on the other side of a freshly polished cherry wood table, accented with a white lace doily and a yellow candle. Her painted pink lips match her pink and white pinstripe blouse and perfectly pressed white trousers. She sits in a wheelchair, but other than that, she's in good health. Like Will, Lois is a centenarian.
I was 99 in April.
Will and Lois Clark met over 70 years ago, before the Second World War. She described for me how they met.
My husband is a retired dentist, and he had already graduated from dental school when I met him and had his practice established. And I graduated from Northwestern in dental hygiene, and he was in the same suite of offices that I was in with my associate, and we got together.
A short while later, Will asked Lois to marry him, in a very comedic way. He went down to the local dime store and bought the cheapest, ugliest ring he could find, and at first presented that diamond to her.
Well, it was a half an hour after he gave me the dime store diamond that he gave me my real diamond. So, and I thought, if I marry this man, I'm going to have an interesting life, very interesting, and it has been.
Mr. Clark, how long have you and Mrs. Clark been married?
We've been married
72 and a half years.
Now, let me get 72 years. Mm-hmm. And last November.
We had a small wedding in our home, my home, and a funny thing happened just before. His best man was, and he were in the back stairway, and I was coming down the front stairway. And he yells out, "Go!"
I didn't yell, I sang. Me. I'm heading for the last roundup.
He's going. And I almost said no.
Will and Lois have three children. And upon the start of World War II, it became inevitable that Will would be drafted. This was particularly hard for Lois.
I spent most of the time during World War II, I spent 3 years in the Pacific. And left her with three little kids, one of them 7 months old.
We had 7, 4, and 7 months when he went to the South Pacific for 3 years then. I didn't know where he was and didn't know when he was coming home. It was rough. Mm-hmm.
She grew up fast.
Will went on to serve in Korea, and when he returned, he continued his dental practice until he retired at the age of 64. All their life, the Clarks have stayed active. Lois plays cards, and for years, Will rode a bike 5 miles a day and played golf 4 times a week, always walking the course, carrying his golf clubs.
But he took up a lot of different things, like painting, pictures, you know. He became, an artist, and he doesn't like that expression. But then, then he became the Republican precinct committeeman, and took the painting lessons, and he was busy all the time. And he didn't have much time to relax, but he finally gave up some of that.
Paintings of vivid floral arrangements and landscapes hang on the walls of their home. They were all created by Will. However, he doesn't want to be called an artist.
I found out, being around some of these art shows, that I wasn't a very good. And I could stand being a 15 handicap golfer, but I couldn't stand being a 15 handicap artist.
Lois also tells me that Will has taken up cooking during his golden years, although it's a very special kind of cooking.
He has developed into a very good cook.
Really? What do you like to cook?
Well, I make what they call yes ma'am stuff. She says, put that stuff in, this stuff, and I say, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am.
Even though Will is nearing 102, he and Lois still travel quite often, visiting their family and friends. They stress the importance of staying active, and Will still has his driver's license. It was just renewed for 5 more years, and he doesn't even have to wear glasses. Just last weekend, they drove the Apache Trail for the first time. And on his 100th birthday, he bought himself a new van, something he'd always wanted. The Clarks have a theory as to why they've lived so long.
Well, I do contribute to her.
And I say it's him.
If you can't get along with her, you couldn't get along with anybody.
We try to help each other. It's one of the secrets. You know, you just have to remember that he is a human being and I'm a human being, and we just really try to manage to be really good to each other.
See, she's always right. And you know, it's tough. It's tough to be married to a gal that's always right.
Will and Lois's son Terry has a theory of his own. He says they have the two goods, good health and a good attitude.
But no doubt, they both have a good sense of humor and are still able to laugh at life. There have been some bad times, but mostly good times. And through it all, there was always laughter. Up next on Arizona Spotlight, local author Dr. Ruben Nyman will be here to discuss his book, Healing Night, The Science of Sleeping, Dreaming, and Awakening. You're listening to Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Millions of Americans suffer from a sleep disorder, and according to the New York Times, approximately 42 million sleeping pill prescriptions were filled last year. A new book called Healing Night explores sleeping, dreaming, and awakening, going far beyond the science of sleep medicine. Dr. Ruben Nyman is the author of that book. He's clinical assistant professor of medicine and the sleep and dream specialist at the University of Arizona's program in integrative medicine. He joins us now in our studios. Dr. Nyman, thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, tell me a little bit about your new book and what you reveal about the science of sleep.
Well, it's both the science and the spirit of sleep, and I think it's important to bring those two together. You know, most of us are aware today that we're facing a serious sleep epidemic, and despite efforts on the part of many organizations, things seem to be getting worse and worse every year. I think the reason for that is we're missing a very basic point, and I really think we need a radical paradigm shift in the way we look at sleep and night. And that's about introducing both a personal and spiritual dimension to our sleep. We've over-mechanized it. If you look at the scientific data on sleep, about what we know scientifically about sleep problems and improving sleep, it tends to be very mechanistic. And we've, over the years, washed away this very subtle, but I think very critical, personal, even mythic dimension to sleep.
And can you explain the spiritual dimension that we should?
Yeah. On the cover of my book, I have an image of the Greek goddess Nyx, the goddess of night, who at one time was a very powerful goddess. And there's a sense that night, who is the mother of sleep, who then becomes the father of dreams, that this ancestry brings some qualities of sleep, qualities of night from the heavens, if you will, from a spiritual dimension. Up until recent years, night and night consciousness, falling asleep, the actual act of sleeping and dreaming were considered very important altered states of consciousness. And today, we've reduced them to chemical knockouts. And I think this naivete about what sleep is one of the reasons we see an increasing dependence on sleeping pills, which actually simulate sleep and produce a chemical knockout. We're losing significant amounts of our sleep decade after decade. We're sleeping less and less. And I think part of that is the result of the sweep into the heights of the industrial movement. From a simple number standpoint, sleep disorders are the number one health problem in the United States today. And many millions, tens of millions of people suffer from insomnia, difficulty falling asleep, difficulty in staying asleep, sleep apnea, and a host of dozens of other sleep disorders.
And how do we remedy these sleep disorders?
Sometimes I think that if we're talking in generalities, the secret of a good night's sleep would be a good day's waking. I write about this notion in my book that it's not a simple notion. It's certainly not about taking a sleeping pill, which may be a good short-term measure, but the majority of people who use sleeping pills on a short-term basis end up getting seduced by them. But I think we need to look at all of the factors that impact our sleep, which are biological factors like nutrition and exercise, psychological factors, managing stress, and also environmental factors. One of the things I write about extensively are problems associated with excessive exposure to light at night.
And how do we introduce this spiritual element to sleep?
Very good question. I think to some degree it's personal. I mean, people who have religious or spiritual beliefs will find that in most traditions there are special rituals and prayers associated with the transition from waking to sleeping. One of the reasons this is important is we have this common notion in our world of going to sleep, which is an activity in a sense. People think or say, I'm going to sleep. The reality is I can't go to sleep. I can go to bed. I can go to the bathroom. I can go to Milwaukee. I can't literally go to sleep. When it comes right down to it, sleep is the default mode. What that means is that there's a part of us that is always asleep. So rather than going to it, I access sleep by letting go of waking. And this notion of letting go is a very key and I think universal spiritual principle that shows up in virtually all religions and sacred practices. In our world, lots of people think that if their head hits the pillow when they go out like a light, it's a sign that they're a good sleeper. In fact, if your head hits the pillow when you go out like a light, it could very well be a symptom of a sleep disorder. We're not accustomed to taking a naturally protracted period, going through an easy, gradual transition from waking to sleeping. In fact, I think the average American is really loath to spend 10 minutes alone with themselves in the dark. And that's what letting go requires.
Well, the book is Healing Night, The Science and Spirit of Dreaming and Awakening. Dr. Nyman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For more information about the book, go to drnyman.com. The Cinema La Placita series has entered their seventh season. Mark McLemore has more in his Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
Joining me now in the studio, we've got Erica O'Dowd, the originator of the Cinema La Placita series, which has geared up for a new season. Last night was their first show, and it will continue with a May schedule, including classics like The Seven-Year Itch, Chinatown, Vertigo, and Hard Day's Night. Thanks for coming down, Erica.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about the series down there. What can people expect if they come to see a movie at La Placita?
Well, first of all, especially this time of year, you can expect a nice, cool, starry night. The sun sets a little bit before we start the movie. Later on in the season, of course, the sun goes down a little bit later, but it's always cool in the summertime in the evenings, and that's the key, is that when the rest of the, you know, everybody leaves town and they think that summer is unbearable, the rest of us know that all you have to do is lay low until the sun goes down. And so you come down. We have plastic chairs, and there's a lawn that you can spread out a blanket. And at about 7:30 or so, when the sun sets, we show a classic film up against a wall in a beautiful shady plaza downtown.
Well, these screenings are open to the public, and it's a series that's been going on now. This will be the start of the seventh year, right?
That's right. We started back in May of 2000, and every year our audience gets bigger. It's about an estimated 200 people per night come down and see a movie every Thursday night. 6 months out of the year we show movies, May through October. So all told, I think we've brought about 40,000 people downtown to see outdoor movies.
One question that might come up for people who visit downtown is, what about parking?
Oh, okay. Well, there's plenty of parking available for our event in the parking garage that's just on Stone Avenue, just south of Broadway. It's also very brightly painted, as is La Placita Village, where we hold the movie, so you really can't miss it. So there's plenty of parking. The admission is free. We're completely privately funded. We just get donations and sponsorships from local businesses and people who are interested in keeping this film series going.
And they obviously are. You've been able to continue it this long.
I know. 7 years. I can't believe it.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the series you've got in May?
Well, let's see. Next Thursday, we're going to be showing Chinatown. And then the Thursday after that, May 18th, we'll be showing Vertigo. And then, of course, May 25th, A Hard Day's Night. And we're going to continue on through the summer, through the end of October, showing classic films.
So if people are interested in finding out more about your schedule, what are some ways that they could contact?
The best way, actually, is to get on the email list. And that is by emailing me at outdoormovies@hotmail.com. You'll get a bounce back from me saying, hi, welcome to the email list. And then you get the schedule at the beginning of each month, so you never miss your favorite movie. Mm-hmm. There's also a recorded voicemail message at 326-5282.
The series continues every Thursday night through October. Your next chance to see a film at Cinema La Placita will be with Chinatown next Thursday night.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. I'm Julie Burock.